I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show. My colleagues Matt and Noel are on adventures and will be returning soon. They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. We're exploring something that many of our fellow conspiracy realists have contacted us about over the past 2 to 3 weeks, something pretty crazy. And I'm not going into this exploration alone. I am thrilled and immensely fortunate to be joined by my guest co-host today, Mr. Max Freight Train Williams. Max, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Of course, Ben. It's great to be here. I've been in the background before on this one, but to actually be on a Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, I think this is the first time. Of course, we've spent a number of hours together on Ridiculous History.
Yeah, that's right. Longtime listeners may recognize your dulcet tones as those of the super producer of Ridiculous History, as well as one of the masterminds behind the astonishing show Ephemeral. Max, let's pause there. Could you tell everybody in the crowd, if they have somehow not heard of this, what Ephemeral is?
So Ephemeral is, as a term at least, it's something that's kind of like fleeting, can go away. So the show Ephemeral, the purpose behind it was to help preserve things that either do not have enough attention given to them or we're afraid that might lose that attention, but basically kind of give it some sort of permanent state. And this can apply to many things, such as we had an episode about Ottoman music in New York City in the early 1900s, which is something I never had heard of. And there was all this very obscure, poorly collected works of music that, you know, by putting into a podcast form, we're able to preserve it. But we also, you know, one episode that I did that I very much loved that I did was about the history of video games, which is video games in its early state is very ephemeral because there's just not that many people keeping great records and history of it. I think I sent this to you, but I went to a pinball and arcade museum in the outskirts of Portland, Oregon. And also, you know, I did an episode, we all did an episode about, we had an Ed Wood one, we had one about Herc Harvey and the Carnival of Souls, Vampira, lots of great stuff.
And I can't praise this show enough. It is a fantastic listen. It's also one of my favorite things this network has done.
And it has very little to do with our conversation this evening. Max, tonight I have asked you here to help Paul and I explore an odd piece of internet ephemera, something quite recent. There is a person, so far anonymous, who recently rocked Reddit and the UFO community overall by posting what is, at the very least, an extraordinary tale. First things first. Here are the facts. Max, it occurs to me that you and I, in all our quality time together, and we've been in the trenches, man, we've got some war stories. In all our time together, we have never discussed the concept of extraterrestrials, UFOs, UAP, or aliens. And you've got some thoughts on this.
Yes. Well, first and foremost, there is nothing more ephemeral in this world than Reddit. I have opinions on Reddit, but Reddit as itself is a very ephemeral thing because it can just all be deleted and just gone forever. So I'm a big believer in just like the infinite universe. Like this thing just keeps going out and out and out and out and out. So it's just egotistical to think that we're the only sentient life that it has evolved. I mean, who knows that even if we are the only sentient life on this planet? I mean, what is it? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that says we're number three, dolphins are two, rats are number one. But, you know, in the counter of the infinite universe, the chances of two sentient life forms running into each other is very rare. If, you know, the chance of sentient life developing on a planet is so tiny that it's just like, it's more likely that there's sentient life all throughout the universe and we're never going to run into it.
Right. You've nailed it, man. Because when we talk about aliens in the West, the concept of extraterrestrial or extra-dimensional, non-human, sentient life is having what public relations goons and paparazzi would call a moment. It was interesting to find that as of 2021, well over half of people in the United States, 65% of Americans, believed in aliens. And this comes from a Pew Research poll that happened on the heels of that infamous UAP report to Congress. I guess we should also talk a little bit about UAP. So all reputable scientists and all reputable politicians, which might be a bit of a paradoxical term, they all want to avoid using the phrase aliens or using the phrase UFO. So they go with UAP, unidentified anomalous phenomenon. So just something out there in the sky or something moving from water to the surface to the sky that is currently unknown to all the experts in the Western world. For 65% of the US public, that is a given. They're saying, okay, aliens, for some of the reasons that you described, Max, they have to be around. And there's some interesting stuff in this poll as well, which is still pretty recent. 2021 wasn't too long ago. There's first an age divide. Did you see this?
Yes, I did. And I also love that the two groups you have focused on, we don't belong in.
Right.
Yeah, I just want to point that out.
It's true. We are neither scientists nor, thank goodness, politicians.
Oh, I was going to say we're not under 30 and we're not over 55.
Oh, also true. Yeah. Give us the stat, if you would.
Yeah, so it's like 3/4 of adults who are under the age of 30 think that aliens are real, while 57% of those over 50 do not think they're real, which I don't know. I guess that tracks, but it's like, you know, it's giving that a perception that as time goes on, we're getting more, you know, people are starting to believe more that they might be real. Like, you know, like as Mulder would say, like, we want to believe.
We want to believe.
And yes, I spent all day thinking about X-Files and Mulder and Scully and stuff.
I'm so glad this absolutely wrecked your schedule today, because the X-Files is an excellent example of mainstreaming this conversation, right? And a bit prescient, you could also argue. There was a bit of unexpected optimism in this poll and others like it. So our numbers are going like a little over half for a lot of this stuff. But when people were asked whether UFOs or UAP or aliens, et cetera, at all, were a security risk to the United States, 87% of people said, nah, not really. The assumption being that there might be something out there, but why would they care about our dirt-bound politics? And that's kind of cool.
I mean that tracks, because you think about it, like, you know, if there were aliens flying around who were sophisticated enough to come from other, you know, galaxies or anything like that, they wouldn't care about us. Like, we are like, you know, the ants. As long as we don't go into their territory, they wouldn't care. I mean, I don't feel like aliens would want to, you know, go like all Independence Day on us and blow us up for absolutely no reason. Because do they ever explain why in Independence Day the aliens blow up like all the big cities and stuff? I don't think they do.
Not really.
Is that in the second movie? Because I didn't watch that.
I didn't watch.
Liam? What is his name? The other Hemsworth. Liam Hemsworth. Other Hemsworth.
Yeah, Independence Day was just amazing when I first saw it. What an experience! I believe the implication is simply that the aliens are attacking the largest human population centers, which would therefore also be the largest infrastructure centers. But you know, it's a work of fiction.
Doesn't seem like there's a strong motivation behind it. And that's kind of like, I feel like they wouldn't have a strong motivation. And also, I say the reason, like, I'm not afraid of an alien attack either, because there's enough crap on this planet to scare me. Like, you know, we just had a pandemic, you know, sure. We have global warming, mm-hmm. Elephants remember terrible things we do to them, and the murder hornets are eventually going to come, right?
Oh, yeah. No, they're here. It is true, man. In this show, and Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, we have talked at length in previous episodes about something that you articulated so well just a few moments past. The sheer math involved in imagining non-human intelligence beyond the bounds of Earth, the Fermi paradox, and so on. In short, the best way to say it is this. The universe is big, dude, and it's so old, it is all but inevitable that intelligent non-human life must have existed, may exist now, or will exist at some point. And sadly, the same math that statistically proves that also makes the odds against those life forms ever visiting Earth insanely, inestimably high. I mean, look, saying that, yes, intelligent non-human life may exist somewhere, that is very much not the same thing as saying they would ever visit Earth. That's a lot like saying, well, I think there are people who are alive in Asia. You know, that doesn't mean they visited Birmingham. Why? Why would they?
Right. And like, I think it's like, you have to understand how massive space is, because like, let's say the United States spent the next 5 years investing solely in NASA. How fast of a spaceship do you think they could get? Something that could get to Mars in 2 years? And they consider just getting outside of our solar system? Mm-hmm. And then you would have to go way past that. Space is freaking big, as you said. It is massive. And we're a little speck in it. So it's, you know, I would love, you know, being a child of raised on Star Trek, I would love to interact with other species and stuff like that. I think there's actually some good that could come out of it. But the chances of that actually happening is just not going
to
happen.
Yeah. Add to that the chances of Earthbound life recognizing non-terrestrial intelligence or even non-terrestrial life forms. You know, there could be life forms with completely different starting points in terms of their biology, in terms of their cognition. The universe is so big, in fact, that when people talk about measuring the universe, they can only talk about what we call the observable universe. The observable universe is 93 billion light years as the particle or the wave flies, and that's definitely not the whole thing. So let's zoom back in. Here we are. We're in the US. we're on Earth. We're in our, you know, cute little Airbnb of a solar system. In the wake of all this UFO, UAP news, fascination with alien life has again gone mainstream. It's something that people talk about over the dinner table or what have you. To steal the old line from Fox News, now more than ever, disclosure seems possible. And Max, you're familiar with this concept, right? The idea of disclosure?
Oh yeah, I am somewhat aware of it.
How would you describe it? If someone has somehow been listening to this show and is not familiar with the concept.
So disclosure, if I'm remembering this correctly, is basically along the idea that some governments whatsoever know about extraterrestrial life or extra-dimensional life or any of those things, and they're like, maybe we can tell people now. Like, they've known about it, but they're like, okay, now we think people can know about it and they won't, you know, destroy the whole world freaking out. Am I nailing that at all?
Home run, man.
Home run.
That's exactly it.
And Ben, you nailed that sports reference. You're getting better.
Hey, thanks, man. Yeah, I saw a baseball game.
Oh, I'm proud of you, bud.
It's okay. I don't remember which one.
I can see you look like you got some sun.
Thanks. Yeah. And you know I'm not a day walker, so it was a special occasion. But ufologists will agree with you there, bro, because disclosure is this idea that for some unknown length of time, world governments, possibly many world governments, have possessed knowledge of something beyond the bounds of human experience, and they may have been playing a long game toward announcing that fact, you know, knowing that, of course, this would trigger a tremendous social upheaval. This would be one of the top three biggest revelations in all of human experience. And at present, as we record this evening, Monday, July 24th, 2023, none of this has happened. Absolutely none of it. There is no universally acknowledged proof of life beyond Earth or beyond the current dimension in which the humans reside. But more and more claims surface at an increasing rate with each passing month. So we have to ask, what else will come out? And believe it or not, as Ripley's would say, we have found something bizarre. Off air, earlier, I had asked you to join us on this episode because I thought you would bring some really interesting perspective to this, Max. We want to thank all our fellow conspiracy realists who wrote to us about this. Over on Reddit, of all places, there's a guy who claims that all of this alien stuff is true, and then this person disappeared.
Huh? Nah. Yeah. So, Ben, when you first asked me to read this, I decided to reach out a little bit more also. So I have my friend, his name's Shoal. I sent him a text. I sent him actually the link to this article as well, because I found with a lot of these type of things, I am much, go back to the X-Files analogy. I'm Scully, he is Mulder. So okay. I asked him to read it as well so I could get some of his opinions. I asked him and then I asked his opinions and I tried to put my finger on the scale because I feel like it helped, you know, deal with some of my skepticism I have about basically anything on Reddit. If it's on Reddit, I come with it with a large amount of skepticism. And then if it's about from Reddit about a guy saying he worked on something where they were basically dissecting aliens or EBOs, I'm just – my eyes are going to roll in the back of my head as soon as I start reading it. But I read the whole thing.
Read the whole thing.
And I'm trying to keep an open mind.
All right. Yes. The truth is out there, but what is the truth? We're going to pause for a word from our sponsors, and then we'll dive in or blast off.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Here's where it gets crazy. This is popularly known as the EBO post. Max, as you know, this post hit Reddit toward the end of this June 2023, and it was created by someone calling themselves EBO scientist. EBO is an acronym, like UFO or UAP, that means exobiospheric organisms. I had never heard the term before. This poster, whomever they may be, was banned shortly after creating their post, and they made a second account. In a burst of creativity, they called themselves EBO Scientist A.
They were just trying to get banned again. They literally had to have been.
If indeed it was the same person, that's another wrinkle, right?
Ah, true.
And so this is a very long, in-depth post, and it begins with the following quote. Would you do the honor, sir?
From the late 2000s to the mid-2010s, I worked as a molecular biologist for a national security contractor in a program to study exobiospheric organisms, also known as EBOs. I added the also known in there. The aim of the program was to elucidate the genome and the protonome basis of these organisms.
Okay, so diving right in. A proteinome is a set of proteins that is present in an organism, depending on its environment. Or it could mean the full complement of proteins that are created by a particular genome. Let's be honest. This is what a lot of people would call a quote-unquote long read. It clocks in at something like 5,300 plus words. And even the most skeptical of those among us have to admit, this is a pretty good short story. So, Max, let's begin by analyzing the structure of this, get to some of the main claims. It starts with a foreword, or an introduction, we could call it, wherein the author discusses how they became involved with the project, and they talk about a weird hiring process. They talk about the nature of their employment. And before they even get into any of that, at the very top, like right after the quote that you read so well there, by the way, I like the serious voice, they say the U.S. government has been studying these entities for decades and decades, and that it wasn't until the late 1990s that breakthroughs in DNA sequencing technology reinvigorated the field. So apparently, the country's top scientists were waiting for a breakthrough in parallel fields of inquiry before they could do much more. And I guess, you know, that sort of tracks.
That tracks-ish, I guess. I don't know. But that, I mean, that's also something you don't need any sort of like real fast knowledge of to say at all. I mean, but it's, I'm just going to say this at the beginning. There's a lot of stuff that there's just, it's not provable at all, but it's also not disprovable at all too, where it's like, yeah, you have the human genome theory getting completed. And when did that get completed? 2001? I can't remember.
The Human Genome Project you're referencing, which maps out the entirety of the human genetic structure.
Mm-hmm. And so you have that kind of stuff going on. So sure, it tracks, whatever. Okay.
Right, right. That's, you could, if we want to be snarky skeptical, we could say this similar to saying the popularization of the internet led to the explosion of demonic possession online, right? Like the internet did become a thing at some point.
Well, it's like there, I remember learning it in my psychology class, my first psychology class during college, that there's a positive correlation between ice cream sales and murder.
Right.
Which is right. Just like, okay, but you're leaving the third thing out. The thing that there's a positive correlation between ice cream sales and the heat, and there's a positive correlation between
violence and heat.
It's causation. Correlation does not prove causation type of stuff.
Absolutely. And I'm really glad you bring that up because we are exploring this in an objective way. And we are admitting when we see holes, we also want to pay due diligence to some of the issues here. All right. So first question you would have, if we bracket off, is this true or is this BS? The first question is, why would you come forward now? 2010, early 2010s, it's about a decade ago. So when it comes to this poster's motivation for revealing or disclosing these secrets, the author says, I believe that every human being has the right to know the truth, and that to progress, humanity needs to divest itself of certain institutions and organizations that will probably not survive these revelations in the long term. And then they have like, I would group them as three big warnings or caveats that really stood out to me. I'm just going to be honest with you. They're the kind of thing that you would put at the top of an argument if you're about to deceive people.
Yeah, it's got some real medicine man snake. We just did an episode recently on Ridiculous History about snake oil, and it's kind of like something like that. That's what it feels like. And I mean, I do like this line though beforehand, talking about like how these certain institutions and organizations will not survive. So to go back to I've grown up watching Star Trek. A lot of like my theories of life have come from Star Trek theories. And one of the things behind it is, once humans discovered extraterrestrial life, they were able to, instead of fighting each other, band together as a species, because it became apparent that, oh, if we don't, you know, band together and work together and stop letting these small differences separate us, then something's going to show up and just get rid of us. We're going to be some sort of annoyance, or they're going to want our planet or whatever. So I that line I like, but also you could get that line from just watching Star Trek.
Sure. And additionally, you could get that train of thought from looking at things like the idea of Project Bluebeam, which is faking a divine intervention or an alien presence to further unite people during the Cold War, or of course the seminal graphic novel The Watchmen, which we won't spoil, but something like that also occurs in The Watchmen and is pivotal to the plot. The issues, the odd warnings are, at first the poster says, look, what I'm saying is not going to make a difference at all. It's going to have very little impact. I just want to get it out there.
I have many English teachers that would crack you down. Like, do not sell short your product that early. No one's going to read it seriously if you say that at the start. So that's immediately what I thought when I read that one.
True. And they're right. And then they they essentially argue that this is a process of erosion, of eroding the secrecy and opacity surrounding this stuff. And then they say also, as a molecular biologist, I'm going to be very technical in my discourse here, right? Or in my descriptions. They don't call it a story ever. And then they say, to protect their anonymity and to protect their family, they are going to, quote, introduce red herrings, unquote, as a protective measure. So they're saying that they are going to be misleading about some things in this post. Additionally, at this point, when you're reading through, it becomes very clear that we are not going to be able to speak with this person on air, at the very, very least, you know. The hiring process story, though, that they get into, that's pretty funny to me. And I don't know, man, this might give some of our PhDs in the crowd a bit of a chuckle, because that is such a rarefied world. And even this person, even this guy, we don't know their identified gender or whatever, but even this person has a bit of a cynical point where they say, yeah, you got a network. If you want a job.
I think that's what they say is like their best quality. It's like, yeah, I'm good at networking. Right. And I mean, the way they talk about this job from the get-go, I'm like, how much money were they offering? That's all I was thinking. Because it's like, they talk about this whole process with like such a dour, like not even before they get into the job, like the whole like interview process being like, this was awful. So it, like the next question I would want to ask was like, and how much did they offer you? Because you kept doing this process, because if it was some crap number, boom, not believing it at all. This is some crap, terrible number, and they're talking about how bad this process was. They wouldn't have taken this job.
Mm-hmm.
Understand it.
Yeah, and to be clear, this person, according to the story, knows nothing about what they're getting into, and we should trumpet this part loudly. The claim is that EBOs, these non-human intelligent entities, are real. The government possesses them, as well as possibly technology, knows a little bit about their culture / religion. And this is proof, or this is at least a big fish story about it. I love that you mentioned the hiring process. So this person, we'll just refer to them as EBO guy for convenience, maybe. This person says, I went through 3 interviews. They got increasingly suspicious, and they were each held in a different location. And in the first interview, my PhD in molecular biology from an unidentified university, maybe it was important in the first interview, but in the second one and the third one, they seemed to care less and less. The first interview was with 2 senior scientists. The second and third, this is a quote, are with, quote, people I've never seen again who are obviously not interested in science. Sometime after the interview, I was asked to go to a 4th location where what seemed like a corporate lawyer presented me with an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement. He made sure not only to explain every detail, but also that I understood the consequence of not respecting it, which, to your point, Max, sounds like a lot to go through.
Yeah. Also, I got a new theory right here. The second and the third person were the same person, and they were an EBO.
Nice. Nice. Boom.
Let's using go with it.
Using their tremendously flexible genetic engineering prowess, right? Mm-hmm.
And wearing elevator shoes so they don't appear at 4'9".
Right. Yeah. And maybe glasses, fake nose. So according to the story, this individual, whom we're calling EBO guy, knowing nothing else about them, they take the job and they spend the first several weeks doing paperwork, doing homework and review. For anybody who's ever been hired in a corporate level job, office job, something like that, you know that you lose at least a couple of days just doing paperwork, filling out largely the same information through a variety of forms. And for this person, for EBO guy, they're reading no good summaries. They're reading a bunch of memoranda and a bunch of studies and a bunch of other like white papers, essentially, about the nuts and bolts of this EBO alien biology. And they don't have access to all the documents. They're not going to learn anything about technology, anything about how the government plans to leverage this knowledge. But they are getting a brief cultural overview, you could say, of the food, the nutrition that these creatures require, their concept of religion and or culture. And then there's this description of basically a day at the office. You know, it's not a big office. There are, what, 20 scientists at the base level. And this person is clearly one of those 20 scientists in the story. There are four senior or supervisory scientists. And then there's a director. The scientists, where this person is at, and on that level, they are entirely dedicated to technical work, to studying aspects of this unfamiliar or troublingly familiar genome. And then, Max, there's something so wild. The guy says the location of the lab.
Okay, what? So this is what I thought the first time I read it, and I still think of this very much. That has to be a red herring, or at least a red herring. If so, and let's do the hypothetical. Let's say the story is true 100%, which okay. I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying for this hypothetical right here, this is a true story, but this person is trying to protect themselves by throwing out red herrings. This has to be one of the red herrings.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Also looked it up, Fort Detrick. It's just northwest of D.C.
Right.
The town of Frederick, not to be confused with Matthew.
Mm-hmm. Right. First of his name. This poster says the lab is in a secure basement at this fort in Maryland. And let me tell you all about the basement lab. Let me tell you about the different levels of the lab. Let me tell you how I was surprised that there weren't higher safeguards, biologically speaking. And I know for sure that there are EBOs, these non-human organisms, stored in this basement. There are four in total. They are all dead. None of their corpses are complete corpses, and they all appear to have died violently. If I recall correctly, the poster says they look like they were in horrific motorcycle crashes or something.
Well, EBOs, they really like their motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
Was that too morbid?
Dudes.
Yeah, let's go with it.
Nah, let's keep it. So, this poster says there are more of these creatures or cadavers in the possession of Uncle Sam, and they're simply hidden in other laboratories. There's a weird, really, to me, really neat part where the poster says, well, I assume, or I think, based on what little I've read, that there may be living specimens that are also held somewhere. Maybe they're hostages, maybe they're allies, maybe they're diplomats, maybe they're prisoners. And anyway, this person cuts past that, or this poster cuts past that, and dives into the meat of their ideas, which concern biology and genetic science, right? We've got a quote that's a little bit long, but I think should be read in full. And Max, I loved your voice so much that it would mean the world if you'd do us the honor of assuming this character again.
All right, assuming. First, I'd like to discuss their genetics. Their genetics are like ours, based on DNA. This fact was very puzzling for me when I first learned about it. We imagine that beings from an alternate biosphere would have genetics based on a completely foreign biochemical system. And surprisingly, this is not the case. Yeah, that part jumped out to me too. I have some opinions on that part, but I guess I'll get through the rest of this quote first. Several conclusions can be drawn from the surprising revelation. The one that immediately comes to mind is that our biosphere and theirs share a common ancestry. They're eukaryotes, which means their cells have nuclei containing genetic material, which suggests that their biosphere would have been separated from ours sometime after the appearance of this type of organism.
Maybe. Let's pause there. What if that evolved independently? Improbable, but possible. We don't know.
Right. Well, I mean, if you go back to the, you know, infinite universe, improbable is irrelevant because there is just going to be, it's like, yeah, we might run this test a billion times, but we're going to keep running this test over and over and over and over again. So there's actually, to quote a different sci-fi show, Orville from Seth MacFarlane, which I had my, you know, misgivings beforehand, but it's actually an A-plus sci-fi show. They have this theory of basically, like, there's, because of the infinite universe, the same stuff repeating. So, like, they find a planet at one point that developed almost identically to Earth. It has its, like, small differences, but it's, like, it's populated by humans, its atmosphere and stuff like that, very similar to Earth, because you're talking about the infinite universe. It's actually very possible. It's actually, if you think about it, the universe continuing, it's not even probable, it is definite that it will happen.
Sure. Yeah, statistically inevitable, right? And now we get to something that does a little bit of world building in this story.
The term exobiospheric organism is actually a misnomer, but as it's a historical term, it's still used.
Their genetics.
Yeah. It's like, oh, come on. You guys haven't updated the term yet? But I don't know. Someone's still around that has a real tight attachment to that term, I guess. They haven't retired yet. They don't want to like take the term away from Betsy until she's fully out of the picture.
Okay.
Their genetics are not only based on the same genetic system, but they're also even compatible with our own cellular machinery. This means that you can take a human gene and insert it into an EBO cell, and that gene will be translated into their protein. And this, of course, works in reverse with a human gene inserted into an EBO cell. Ugh, creepy.
Pretty bold. The poster, in their defense, does go on to say there are specific reasons why the final product would not be viable. But what they're describing is essentially something like a chimera, you know, the idea that one could mix and match genes or genetic information from differing life forms. It's very bold, and it has the implication, again, that not only are these entities more similar to Earth life than we might initially assume, but they're similar enough to play Mad Lib genetically. I mean,
I guess we'll get into this. They don't have reproductive parts, but you could, in theory, create a hybrid human EBO because they're based off the same genetic blocks, basically. I mean, it's not impossible in theory because it could be, because everything is probably might be evolved from the same stuff. This is one that I'm just like, okay, like, are we going to be working off the theory that we were both evolved from the same planet or something like that? This one lost me. I don't know, in the interview part of the story where it's like, no, man, this guy did not take this job. This interview was too creepy and sketchy. But this part too, I'm like sitting there, I'm like, okay.
It's a lot. Yeah.
It is a lot.
According to this description, the full genome of these EBO, or what we could refer to as, let's just say aliens, just for funsies, apparently their genome has been roughly mapped and consists of, quote, 16 circular chromosomes. And their genome is not only smaller than that of humans, but composed in such a way that the poster believes purposeful genetic engineering is the only way this could have occurred. They're looking at this and they're saying, all right, I know about humans. I know so much of human DNA is junk DNA. It's just there. It doesn't really do anything. Without name checking Graham Hancock, we just accept that as a given. How is this DNA How is it built so much better, so much more efficiently? And this leads the author to speculate that the EBO geneticist, because remember, they're intelligent life forms as well in the story, that they can insert or remove genes at will in a way that is more targeted and more efficient than human technology allows, which means they can custom build individual entities for specialization in a given role or task. And they flirt a bit with what would be an appropriate analogy in this conversation. They flirt a bit with the idea of insect hierarchies, right? Like, you know, you got the worker ant, you got the bee, you got the, you know, you got the drones, you got the insects are very good at that. They're one of the best examples.
I will say this is the point that the poster goes on about that I'm like, I can actually, this makes sense. Genetic manipulation, I think this would actually, there's a lot of people who would never come out and say this, but, you know, they would absolutely love if you could manipulate people to, you know, be able to be on their feet for 12 hours without having to use a bathroom break or, you know, complain or talk about unionizing or stuff like that. Like, you know, they would love when we're all on Mars. Okay, now I'm getting in my own conspiracy theories. No, oh, our billionaires want to go to Mars. But, you know, it's very much this I can see. Genetic manipulation, this is maybe a chapter in human evolution that's coming up a lot closer to than we think it is. Because I think this is also going to be a big thing. And, you know, we have a series on Ridiculous History about ridiculous ways royals have died. And in our first episode, we talked about the guy who drank mercury because he thought he would live forever because of it.
He did that. Yeah,
yeah, he died very quickly afterwards because it's mercury. And a big part of extending lives, people think, might be genetic manipulation. So this is something that people are interested in. And it's like, you know, I don't know if it can make us, I don't know, better at talking on a mic or editing audio. Like, I don't know. I might have my genes edited a little bit.
Smarter, faster, stronger. Why not? The problem is that it, in human experience, this is directly related to the concept of eugenics, which is tremendously dangerous because it was implemented originally with incredibly racist ideation, incredibly classist ideation. And it doesn't look, it doesn't matter what political party you ascribe to or whatever your ideology is. It really doesn't matter. Humans are lucky that the concept of eugenics happened before the current era of genetic research, because what they were arguing came from an objectively stupid place. And what they were attempting to do, therefore, had objectively stupid and horrifying results.
Right. This was a very, the theory predated the actual application by a very, very, you know, like what, 80 years probably at minimum. Yeah. And that's a very good thing.
Yeah. Because the way it was practiced, it led to mass sterilization, it led to genocide and attempts at genocide. It was a rationalization for bad and largely stupid people to do bad and stupid things. And I don't use the word stupid lightly here. So for all of our more skeptical conspiracy realists, sit tight. We got your back. We're going to get to some more of those issues in a moment. What you need to know for now is simply this. The post was deleted, but you cannot stop the signal, to quote Serenity. So there are multiple copies of this post. They're verbatim. They're the same thing. And people keep putting it up while it is being taken down. And you can read it now. When you read it, the author is diving into genetic nuts and bolts, talking about the science of transference, talking about proteins, talking about how these translate. And they point out perceived irregularities or differences. And at the same time, pretty often, actually, in their story or in their tale, they pose questions that they themselves consider unanswered. They also dive into the anatomy or the biological system of these things, these aliens they describe as EBOs. And, you know, spoiler, I mean, Max, it's not a spoiler for you. They're basically describing the pop culture gray aliens, yeah. Right?
That's 100% what they went. And when I was reading that, so I put in my headphones, had my phone on, went on a walk and read this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And when I got to that section, I went, oh, seriously? Okay, whatever. It's because it just got more boring to me, because it's just like, we're going gray aliens here. Okay.
In-depth description of it, though, creatures.
Giant eyes, and they poop through their skin.
Yes, they poop through their skin.
Uh-huh.
They
have that's the part that got the most interest to me, because I'm a six-year-old.
Right. They excrete waste through their skin, if we want to put a tie on it. But yeah, they poop through their skin and piss through their skin. Their eyes are about three times the size of the average human eye. Vestigial nose with no protuberance, no body hair. There's a great deal of time spent on talking about how they look gray because they have a biofilm to protect them from various liquids. They also, based on essentially alien autopsy information, we would be led to believe, these creatures also can only ingest liquid of some sort, right? Like very nutrient-rich liquid, sugary broth. And look, in general, what we're saying is, if you find the ideas of grays interesting, you will dig this stuff. These descriptions are fascinating, going into like lung capacity, digestive system, all the hits, all the good stuff. Just think of it as a thought experiment if you consider yourself skeptical. But here's the thing. You might find yourself like our pal Max as you're reading through this, because the description goes on and on and on. And whoop, time for an ad break. We'll be right back.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world, in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Okay. All right. All things being equal, for anyone who's had a chance to read this post, and for anyone who's read all the hubbub about it, both people who think it's a hoax and people who think it's true, One thing is for certain, it's a hell of a story. I enjoyed reading it.
Oh yeah, it's I mean, it's not really my cup of tea, and me being the snooty writer that I can be, I was also proofreading some of it because there are some typos in it,
yeah.
And some parts they left commas out and stuff like that. It was actually, I think, pretty well written. So I mean, I gotta say it was entertaining. It was fun. Yeah. Okay. That's all I got. I mean, I wouldn't really say this changed my opinion on anything.
Right.
Well, also, yeah, I want to thank you again for taking the time to read the whole thing. And let's reiterate, before we continue, your personal take on the concept of extraterrestrials in general. So from what we've discussed, what I understand is this. You agree it is statistically inevitable for some sort of non-human life to have existed, to currently exist, or to exist in the future, but the odds of those creatures interacting with humans are very, very low, to say the least. Is that correct?
That's correct. And also, it is just as likely, if not more likely, that it would be like a sentient sponge than a sentient, like, humanoid.
Yeah, humanoid, that's a little anthropocentric. Yeah, my draft picks, my two favorites on that list are, if it's organic, some sort of fungal entity.
Yeah.
Just has the best, I think, just, we sound like Sports Center here, but just has the best stats for surviving outer space. And then the next pick would be something that we would consider AI. Right, or non-organic, manufactured by another species bound to a planet or a moon, and it was purposely built such that it could withstand the rigors of outer space.
Right. So I was actually listening to a it was a Radio Lab Rewind episode this past weekend. So I don't remember when the original came out, but it was just came out recently. But it was talking about sending people with disabilities into space. And the woman who's – it's this whole endeavor – just listen to the episode go there. But the woman who's kind of one of the head people in charge of it, she's blind. She talks about how people with disabilities on Earth have to adapt all the time to things. And living – and humans are not designed to go into space. Space is just constantly trying to kill us. That's kind of what space's purpose is, which I think Rick Sanchez also says that in Rick and Morty. So I very much believe that statement. But so if you have been dealing with all this stuff all this time, you're probably more adapted to dealing with space than if you haven't, such as, like, you know, the amount of time people on the space station have to ride a seated bike every day. You don't have to do that if you are disabled and don't use your legs. So, yeah, I mean, the whole thought of maybe you created – something to go into space for you. I mean, I want to go a little darker and think, like, you know, you created these robots to be your servants and they overthrew you and killed off your entire race, which that also is in The Orville, by the way. Great sci-fi show, The Orville. Please watch it.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping for a season 4 of that show, by the way, so that's why I'm really trying to promote it a lot.
Yeah, yeah. I was impressed as well. But, you know, I love science fiction because, not to sound like a broken record, when science fiction is functioning at its best, it's only going to be fiction for a limited amount of time. The good stuff has a shelf life before it becomes science fact. So, okay, given all this, Max, you're reading this, and you're a brilliant dude, and you're thinking through it. Was your initial reaction, this is a hoax? I know. I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but it's necessary.
I don't think it's a hoax. I think I ran off. I know you have a couple ideas of what it might be. The theory that I'm going with is this is a work of creative writing because it's somebody who knows a lot about this kind of stuff. Like, I couldn't write this stuff because I don't know stuff about genealogy. That does not mean you have to have a PhD to write that. I think that's something – because the thing is very easy to get into this rationalization saying, well – they have to be an expert of this stuff to write this about, like, you know, chromosomes and all this crazy stuff that, like, when I was reading it, I'm like, what? Okay, this is just so complicated. This is really going over my head. But, I mean, the same way, it's just like, I make podcasts, so I talk on podcasts, but I can talk your ear off for 2 hours about baseball because that's my hobby. I like baseball.
Yeah, you've done it. I've done it.
I could do it right now. I actually have a little bit prepared, but I'm not going to do it for the sake of time.
Okay. I hear you.
So I don't think it's really, I mean, maybe they're trying to see some people for fun, but I mean, people write stuff and you might be like, oh, well, they're not making any money off this. So, like, maybe they're just, this is just what they wanted to do for fun that
right.
day or that the week.
The act of creation is itself the goal of creation, right?
Right.
If it is a hoax, then we do have questions we have to answer. Why bother in the first place? You make an excellent point there, man, because it cannot be internet clout. The idea of making money off of it seems laughable. The person in question, again, banned, blocked from Reddit. It's Reddit, so I'm sure it's very easy to just create a new handle. But it seems like they are not planning to write a book, nor does it seem they're planning to get on the lucrative, somewhat cynically monetized UFO speaking circuit. And with that being said, there are some serious issues, and they are very real-life issues. We see this again and again in the stories of proven whistleblowers. While being both diplomatic and sincere, as Max said, folks, we are not calling this person a liar. We've had no interaction with them other than reading their one post. But we can say there are serious issues with both the way this whale tale has been spread, as well as with the information this person chose to disclose. Max, we know it as a fact. Anyone who has worked in sensitive government research, pardon my French, forget aliens. Think about nuclear weapons,
right.
bio research, industrial espionage, all that jazz. Every single person working in those fields knows that true anonymity is impossible.
Right. I mean, we work in podcasts, and I think true anonymity for us is impossible, let alone government secrets and that kind of stuff. No, like, this isn't going to happen. You're not going to be able to, like, get on your own computer in, like, a public area and post this thing. You'd be, oh, fine. It's like, if this position actually existed, Ben, how many people do you think in the world would know about EBOs?
Ooh, conservatively, like, if there are multiple labs and there are 25 people per lab, right? If
20, it's comparable. Or is it 20? It's 25, yes, 25.
Yeah, then we're still looking at less than 10,000 people.
Right, exactly. And so then you can start, eliminating down, whittling it down. And you got to assume that this person's not working there anymore. Like they left this place, but they also, when they got hired at, and granted, red herrings and stuff, but I mean, how good are these red herrings actually going to be? Plus, I mean, they probably have security monitoring all these people.
Oh, sure. Are you kidding?
So, and this wouldn't, I don't think this would exist if it was actually true.
Right. Yeah. You can use a VPN all you want. You can take a burner computer. You can post, like you said, via public Wi-Fi in a crowded place like a bus station, airport, etc. But you simply cannot eliminate 100% of the breadcrumbs. You will give yourself away in small things you might not expect, like your writing style, right? Your communication style, which is the equivalent of body language, to be quite honest, and the time at which you post correlated to the time of your activity, et cetera, et cetera. Look, the vast majority of people living in the United States, at least, are under way, way more surveillance than you might imagine. It should keep you up at night. Read our book if you're having too much good sleep. And
read my book, Maxwell James Williams's Guide to Read the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know book.
Great. I love it.
We'll be out at some point.
It'll be out at some point. I've seen some of the proofs. I don't agree with everything, but I respect it. So, people who are working in sensitive areas of research are under far more scrutiny. And that doesn't just mean government employees. That also means people in the world of academia who just happen to be world-class experts in very dangerous things, even if they have no intention of weaponizing that, of like using that for some real world villainy. The powers that be do keep an eye on those folks. They keep a very close eye on them. So if any of this story is true, then it is virtually certain this individual has already been identified. The sample size of people with access to that info is just, to your point, too small. It's too easy to find them. There's not a haystack for the needle.
Exactly. It's just like, you know, I mean, not to get a little dark here, but it's just like, this is that type of person who had this information. And if they were afraid we're going to leak it, they would just be eliminated, wouldn't they? I mean, I know we don't want to believe that we have our own KGB like element and somebody would fall from a high place type of thing. But if this was as secretive as possible, either the government is horribly incompetent, which, yeah,
totally possible.
Or, yeah, it's just, the more and more, I guess we've talked about probability a lot here, and I'm trying to take a very probability-based approach to it, and it's just like, maybe there's like a 1 or 2% chance this thing's real. And that's how I'm trying to look at it. But each of these things make it less and less and less like this makes any sort of sense.
Yeah, and you know, the part about assassinations or targeted killings is unfortunately true. We have a multi-part series on assassinations, and the reason they still exist all the world round is because it's a very effective strategy when executed, poor choice of words, directly. With this in mind, we also have to note that for positions of this sort of sensitivity, real life versions of this do exist outside of the realm of aliens. For positions with this sensitivity, psychological assessments are a huge part of it. And those psychological assessments are at this point capable of prediction, meaning that if they want to spend the time and money, it is possible to identify the person most likely to squeak a bit about something. So we're arriving as a society in a world we're arriving at a world wherein it is possible to know what someone is going to do before they themselves are going to do it, or to at least have a really creepy ballpark estimate of their likelihood.
I mean, some precog stuff going on now.
Yeah, some Minority Report kind of prognostication, but also that could be corrupted inevitably. Look, it could be possible that there are red herrings thrown around here in this story to put people off the scent. And sorry, bud, if the story is true, good hustle. It's not going to work. There are just not enough people in this industry described in this narrative.
Right, exactly. And I mean, I kind of want to circle back, because remember I mentioned at the beginning, I asked my buddy Shoal to read this as well, who is much more of a believer than I am. And this is what he said, and I think it's a good point out. He said a couple things to me about it, but it's kind of like this. I mean, no telling if this guy is full of shit or not, but a lot of the stuff he's saying lines up with the other stuff that's already out there. That's another thing I have kind of with me, and I brought this up with the gray aliens and stuff like that. It just kind of feels like, what has this brought to the – they talked about at the very beginning this eroding of this belief, but I feel like I've heard all this before. Like nothing in this is shifting me at all.
You didn't have an aha moment.
No, I didn't even have an moment.
Right.
It's just, okay, this is all just, I don't know. I feel like I can watch a 1950s movie and get this. Mm-hmm. Not a good one either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for all the reasons that we're describing here, these very real world concerns about safety, this shows us why genuine proven whistleblowers have done one of two things historically. They either put their name and their identity out there for verification. Learn more about me, right? Check my bona fides. And indeed, you will see that I am from the place I'm talking about. Or they have contacted a member of independent press with adequate OPSEC experience, operational security experience. Another problem, why the intense specificity about some things, the intense opacity about other aspects of the story? That's, I'm sure that could also fall under red herring explanation. But finally, what about this? People exercising sincere attempts at disclosure of any secret project, they will overwhelmingly attempt to provide corroboration in some form. They look for someone to second them. They look for someone to vouch for them, right? I'm Max Williams. I produce Ridiculous History. And to prove it, here's my pal, Ben. So I worked here with insert person here who can confirm part of info here, etc. Or here is an example of the documentation I encountered. Here is a real world acknowledged event that supports my claims. Our mystery molecular biologist at this point does not do any of that. They got asked the following question. Have you shared this with the Senate Select Commission or Intelligence or with AARO? And do you have evidence to back this up?
No, thank you. No, I haven't, and no, I won't. It sounds like a honey trap to me. I will not place my life in the hands of politicians. I have no proof other than this message. I know it's not much, but it's what I'm prepared to offer. Sick.
Okay. Yes, fair point. I mean, there's a dilemma here, because if true, that's an understandable concern, but also, if this is so important that you would put your life on the line here and you would be aware of the risk involved, why Reddit?
Yeah, because it's Reddit and you can post whatever you want on Reddit most of the time and you'll get deleted. Your worst things, worst comes worse, will just delete you. I mean, there's nothing in here that completely disproves this. But
no.
I started and I left from when I read this in the morning to now when we're recording this episode, I still have the exact same level of apathy and, I don't know, genuine like belief that this is real, which is basically zero. And it's just because every single chance this person has to kind of be like, see, this is it. This is real. They have kind of taken the other direction, which mm-hmm. I get it. It's security and it's safety and maybe, but it's just every single chance they have. They're choosing, oh no, I can't because of this. And as you've already pointed out, it's not like them taking these safety precautions would actually protect them at all.
Right. Yeah, that's part of the problem, you know, like, and again, this is not us disparaging the person. It's just a person we have not spoken to. And we're thinking through the possibilities. And again, at no point in this are we saying the poster is consciously lying. We can point out, however, that doing even one of the things we described would go so far toward accruing some sort of credibility. And without those things, in the absence of this, we have to logically imagine some additional possibilities. Max, you brought it up first. What if there's someone out there who does have a real PhD or some postdoc experience in molecular biology, and they just like creative writing? What if it's just an art project?
I mean, I think that makes the most sense to me, because it doesn't feel like this person is trying to cause malice.
Right.
And if they were, maybe they should try it a better way.
They weren't saying, you know, and on August 1st, gather in front of your local capital or something like that.
God, what was the religion that we researched on Ridiculous History where they all sold off all their stuff in the 1800s and Millerism?
Millerism.
I mean, it's not Millerism. They're not telling people to, you know, sell off all their possessions because they're about to be, you know, taken up to heaven, or the EBOs are going to start procreating with them. Which, question, at any point do they talk about how these things procreate? Because they don't have genitals. They point that out.
Right. The idea is that they don't, the EBOs in question, believe in a higher power or a meta level of oneness so much that they don't care about the individual level. So such that, you know, family structure as humans understand it doesn't exist. Creatures are instead purposely manufactured.
They're clones. They're squeeze ooze in a thing and produce out an EBO type thing. I also do love the religion part, because I feel like the poster doesn't talk about the religion part. They mention the religion part, and then someone asks them a question, they go more in detail about it, because it reminds me of the absolutely tremendous film that I know you've seen. And I know you've seen multiple times, which is Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Oh,
which is
100%.
Yeah. At the very end, they're arguing. It's like the main character dude, who cares what his name is, versus the alien who's not an alien at all. And their alien, he says, like, thank God for something. And then he starts going on this rant about how aliens believe in God. And then he just has the most amazing dialogue, which is, you stupid, stupid man. And then they get... I always like to point this out. They get into a fist fight, which causes the UFO to catch on fire and explode.
Yeah, I mean, you get in situations.
Like a fist fight. And I was just thinking about that, because it's like the only other time I've heard like people go into religion with talking about aliens or whatever terminology, nomenclature we're using right now.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up. There's one last, perhaps most dangerous piece of the puzzle that even the more like alien skeptical of us may enjoy. Just something to think about. No proof, following on the conversation from this poster. What if this post, while largely fictitious, is meant as a trap? You know what I mean? What if there is some truth to the story? And this post includes just enough of that truth to nudge someone in from the cold, such that they could be identified, addressed, and contained. This does happen, by the way. You know, like one of the first rules of the internet is that if you want a correct answer to something, don't ask the question. Just make a declarative statement that's slightly wrong. And then people will come out of the woodwork, or perhaps in this case, the spacecraft. Okay, hold the phone. We are recording in a different location and
on a different day.
On a different day, through the magic of podcast editing, Max.
Thank you for that, Paul.
Thank you, future Paul. We had a conversation that continued after we were done recording. And we both hit on something, a possibility that neither of us mentioned on air, so we wanted to correct it. Max, the honor goes to you.
Yeah, so remember I mentioned I sent this to my buddy Shoal, because he's much more of a Mulder, I'm much more of a Scully. He went the extra step and he sent it to our mutual friend, Jonah, and Jonah looked at it and goes, dude, this was written by ChatGPT. And I was like, oh, crap, that makes a lot of sense. Like, this is totally, somebody put this in ChatGPT and they wrote it.
I was thinking something similar. Yeah, when we were talking off air, I thought this whole thing could have been written by ChatGPT. So we would love it if you, our fellow conspiracy realist, can read into it. And let Max and Matt and Noel and Paul and Doc Holliday and I, let us know what you think. Is this ChatGPT? And Max, are you saying yes?
I don't think it is, okay. But that would track, especially considering the fact that it's like we had that whole debate about like, why would someone do this? It's like, well, it's a lot easier when you say, ChatGPT, write a story about aliens that seems believable.
I mean, look, whether this is nothing more than a neat work of sci-fi, something closer to a honey trap, one thing is for sure, someone in the conversation, whether it's Uncle Sam, whether it's this anonymous poster, they have stuff they don't want you to know. And I think that's where we have to leave it. Max Freytrain Williams, I want to thank you again for coming on. You're a super busy guy and you made time for us this evening. I want to also thank everyone who wrote in about this. All our fellow conspiracy realists want to hear your thoughts. But first, before we get to that part, Max, where can people find you? Where can they learn more about your work?
So you can learn more about my work. You can listen to Ephemeral. We have many great episodes. The whole The whole show is up and you can just listen to it. There's a lot of great stuff and, you know, look around because maybe some of it isn't up your alley. Like, you know, maybe you're not into films, but you like music. We might have a selection of that. I would suggest eventually listening through all of it because it's more of the study and the beauty of appreciating these important things, these pieces of art that if we don't work conscientiously to preserve this stuff, it's just going to not exist any longer. And, you know, in being a student of history, art and progression of the human species go hand in hand. When art is taken as a priority, we seem to do a lot better. And when art is not taken as a priority, we seem to do a lot worse. So if we want to get out into the solar system and make friends with sentient sponges and stuff, I think we need to appreciate the art. So that's a good way to follow it. Also, you can always listen to Ridiculous History, which features me, this guy, and one of the other guys on this show, along with the other guy who sometimes sings on the show.
That's Noel Brown and Matt Frederick.
Yes, yeah. Yes. There's the names. Also, you can find me on the product formerly known as Twitter, soon to be known as X, because Elon's a weirdo. You can find me at @ATL_MaxWilliams. If it looks like a very dormant, no longer working Twitter handle, that's because that's about correct. But you can find me there.
He is there, folks. I have reached out in the dark, and the dark answered back. It's true. While you are on the Wild West of the internet, you can also find our show. We can't wait to hear your take on Disclosure, on the ideas about this post, on the ideas of EBOs, folklore, new leads on episodes you think your fellow conspiracy realists would enjoy. You can find us on Twitter, find us on Facebook. Group is Here's Where It Gets Crazy. You can find us on Instagram and, of course, our YouTube channel, which we're going to insist on doing until the day we get blackbagged. If you have listened to episodes on Big Data and you no longer sip the social meads, congratulations. Stay strong. Also, you can give us a telephone call. We are, say it with me, 1-833-STDWYTK. You got 3 minutes. Those 3 minutes are yours. Go nuts. Get real weird with it. Give yourself that nickname, street name you always wanted. Tell us what's on your mind. Most importantly, let us know if we can use your name and or message on the air. And I lied. Even more important than that most important thing, if you have a message that needs more than 3 minutes, if you have links to send us, if you have photographs you want us to look at, write to us. Take us to the edge of the rabbit hole. We'll do the rest. All you have to do is send us a good old-fashioned email. We are conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks,
Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.